So every finance segment at some point or other should give you some clues as to how to get rich. It seems only fair. That time has come for RN Drive. I'm excited about it. I'm not very rich and I'm ambitious like the next guy. And the man with the secret, potentially, hopefully, possibly, is Kai Chow, Associate Editor of Multimedia at the Australian Financial Review. Hi, how are you?
Oh, Patricia, thank goodness for all those qualifications at the end.
I know, maybe, possibly, could happen. Unlikely to, actually, guys. Unlikely to. All right. So the management consultant,
Capgemini.
Thank you. Capgemini.
Ernst & Young.
Has looked into where wealthy Australians put their money. And what's the verdict?
Property. What a surprise that Australians like property, Patricia. It turns out that if we look at rich Australians, and the definition they're using is more than $1 million in assets in US terms, because this was a global study, in outside the family home, of course, because we all know that many family homes have become, you know, very, very impressive in their price tag. But not really of much use to us, really, as long as we plan to keep living in them. So 31% of those wealthy Australians' portfolios is in property. Now, you compare that to wealthy Asian investors, where it's just 21%. So really, property is the flavour of the month in Australia amongst the very wealthy, especially when you compare it to the rest of the world, where high net worth individuals invest just 18%. Of their portfolios in the real estate that we just love so much here in Australia.
We do love real estate. We are a nation of real estate lovers. Even people who don't own real estate, and I bet I'm going to start getting texts on this, they want it. Everyone wants to get into real estate. So on some level, we're all into it. What does this say about Australians and their relationship with property? Why?
Well, look, certainly at least amongst the high net worth individuals, it's frankly, you know, they're pretty clinical. It's because they believe that's what's going to get them the best returns on their investment, right?
Yeah.
And in Asia, the property market, property prices have really cooled off there, and that's why it's not quite so much in vogue. As to why Australians love property so much, I mean, geez, so many of these different attitudes towards property across the world are the combination of so many different historical factors. I mean, you look at places like Europe, where the idea of owning your own home is just laughable that you would ever do that. You know, it's just not in the mentality there. And you know, but look, you look at places like Australia and America, where property is seen as a dream. You know, the Australian dream, the American dream. You don't hear too much about the French dream when it comes to investment. You know, the French dreams, I think, well, tend to involve more, non-material pleasures, I guess.
Yeah. But doesn't this mean they're particularly, you know, these high wealth investors are particularly exposed to property prices? What happens if the property bust ever happens? And I know we've been talking about it for some time, but it is fairly inevitable at some stage.
Look, in terms of a bust, obviously we kind of hope it's going to be more of a slow deflation rather
than you're right.
Pop.
I should have nuanced what I just said. That's right. Coming down at some point, I'm not, not
that's
saying
that's right. Leveling off a little bit, you know, which certainly some of the economists that we speak to, we're probably looking at, you know, probably about a year or so away. Things will probably start to peak and then maybe taper off a little bit. Look, in terms of exposure, it's obviously bad news for you know, people that are highly exposed to property prices if things go. But keep in mind, you know, a lot of that money is going to be in things other than their family home. Again, when you're talking about people that have more than $1 million in assets outside their home, Patricia, they're probably not going to be in the street. So I probably wouldn't be passing out the collection plate when the market does turn down.
Kai, you always make me laugh. Does this bring us back to the negative gearing debate? Would we invest so much in property if we didn't have this as an incentive in the system?
Are you kidding? No way. No way. I mean, look, you know, look, it's just the classic property investment strategy for so many Australians to take advantage of the fact of negative gearing, right? Which is obviously where the interest repayments that you have to make on properties is tax deductible, right? Which, you know, basically enables people to build quite impressive portfolios. It is though, of course, because it is so popular and everyone loves it so much, except for perhaps first home buyers that are paying the penalty for
these. Apart from all the people who aren't benefiting from it.
That's right. But with everyone else, it's terrific. But it does make it a tricky political one because you really do have those two different camps. And of course, you do see some changes. For example, the banks have heard it loud and clear that they are meant to be trying to restrict their loans to investors, and that has definitely happened. So the interest rate, for example, that they give investors has been getting more and more unpleasant for investors as time has gone on. And we're actually now starting to see mortgage brokers starting to get cash incentives from banks to lend instead more to mums and dads, to the owner-occupiers, to sort of change the complexion of their portfolios. And it's because there is an understanding that the property market is red hot, but we don't want to like crush the first home buyers in our bid to try to cool those off. So there is some recognition that the system is slowly letting homeowners in a little bit.
And on the subject of wealth, which we promise to, get people lots of money, it seems like Jason Day's caddy can earn you more than playing AFL or NRL, right? This is astonishing. Tell me about this.
Oh, well, look. Well, finally, Patricia asked me for a practical way to make money besides trying to crack the Australian property market. And it's quite simple. Just become a caddy to a world-class golfer. So Jason Day made, thanks to his 5 victories this year, made almost $13 million, right, this
year. Is that all?
Yeah. Well, look, he's a young fella. He's just getting started. Wait till I tell you about Tiger Woods' caddy. But his caddy, Colin Swatton, who started off as his coach, and to his credit, isn't just a guy that carries his bags, right? I mean, Jason Day credits him as someone that really got him in the right direction at a time when he was just a kid who was getting in domestic squabbles and fights and getting drunk at the age of 12. So really helped turn him around. But Jason Day earns $13 million. And your caddies tend to earn about 8 to 10% of their golfers' earnings. So that's made Swatton about $1.3 million this year, right? Now, just to give you a little bit of perspective, hard-working footy players like Jonathan Thurston and Greg Inglis, and as a New South Welshman, I'm usually not too fond of those guys at least 2 or 3 games a year, but they make less money than Colin Swatton. And in fact, everyone makes less money in athletics than Colin Swatton, except, of course, people that play in the National Basketball Association, even the bench warmers, and a couple of our top cricketers. So that is the place to go. But if you think that Colin Swatton has it good, Tiger Woods, when he was at the peak of his powers, he had a New Zealand caddy, Steve Williams, and Steve Williams was his nation's highest paid sportsman during that time. And I use the term sportsman, obviously, in a fairly liberal sense. We're not wanting to put down what caddies do.
No, you don't want to do that, particularly at a crucial time like this where we're hearing that it's actually the smartest way to make money in sport. So how do I become a caddy? I suppose this is the only solution to our wealth problems.
You do have to know a bit about golf. There's obviously a bit of look. It's interesting though. They're not exactly a coach, right? So they're motivators for their golfer, and they count the yardage. So there you go. You need to be able to count, Patricia.
Not so much.
I know. I start to drift a little there too.
Yeah. Well, this is why I'm enjoying my career in journalism so much. Counting not so much. Thank you so much.
No worries, Patricia.
And that, of course, is Kai Chow, Associate Editor of Multimedia at the Australian Financial Review. He's always so much fun and knows so much about money. I'll be back in 5 to cross to New Zealand. But first, it's news time.